Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's Monday, April 10th, 2023, live to be broadcast on Wednesday, April 12th, 2023, on 91.7 FM WHUS stores. Shout out to my coworker, Carrie, whose birthday will be this Wednesday. Or if you're listening on Wednesday, it's today. Happy birthday, Carrie. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So, we're going to talk about this on both shows, I guess. We finally had our first TCC outdoor ride. Did you have fun, Ron?
I had a blast. It was great.
Really?
Great ride, yeah.
What made it great?
Good people, good weather, everybody was well-behaved. The traffic was well-behaved. Everything was good.
It was very nice. We did a short ride to Scotland. Mm-hmm. And usually when we go to Scotland, Scotland's not very far from here. I know, you're thinking Scotland and Britain. But no, Scotland, Connecticut is, I guess, two towns away. Windham is between us and Scotland. Yeah, that's
and
it.
Chaplin is and Chaplin. Between us and Scotland.
Yeah. It's really not far, so it's good for short hops. You know, you can do as little as I know 20 miles may sound like a lot to a lot of you. You can do short hops from our house and from North Windham School to Scotland and back. So, and there's a variety of ways you can go. There's this hill, that hill, the other hill. We climbed Murphy Hill this time.
And a lot of them require a climb, yes.
Yeah, usually one climb because we're sort of bending southeast.
Yeah.
So anytime you go east-west in Connecticut, you're climbing the ridges, so you're going to have to climb something. And when we go back and forth to Scotland, because it's southeast of us, we have to climb over something. So we had a really nice time, and I had a stop at the gazebo. Usually you don't need to have a stop, but we stopped at the gazebo in the middle of Scotland. Scotland has a green and has a little gazebo, and we took pictures, and that was very nice. And we stopped at the library, but it was past noon, so it was already closed. And then we came back and chatted and met up with our friends. And next week we'll go somewhere for a treat.
Okay.
So that'll be nice. Were you warm enough?
I was pretty good. I started out a little chilly and then warmed up. That's kind of the way you want to do it, right? I think.
You were wearing a little bit less than me because you had two layers plus a vest. And I actually had three layers. You know, I had base layer, jersey, and a jacket. So I was dressed even a little warmer than you, which is unusual. And I was fine. But you get sweaty. So anyway. So before I jump into our series on cardiovascular health and start talking about statins, I just wanted to remind you that you want to be careful because the weather has all of a sudden gotten really nice. It was in the 50s yesterday and the day before. We got up to just over 50 in the last 2 days. This week, starting today, we're going to get up into the 60s, and it's just going to climb from there, and we're supposed to see 80s by the end of the week, and it's April, which is insane.
Nice.
So it's going to be very warm weather this week, and that's going to make it so that you want to get outside. Some of you are going to want to get outside and get in their yards, like this one. Yesterday, I couldn't convince him to go on a recovery ride because he was in the yard, which was really a very good thing that he's tending to the yard. I'm not as excited about tending to a yard. I'd rather go ride my bike and then lay around, which is mostly what I did. I'm all about getting the rest and going to visit the skunk cabbage and seeing what plants are out and enjoying the waterways and the different birds and things. So I had a nice day yesterday outdoors. One of the things you have to be careful of is not to overdo it because really a couple of weeks ago, I mean, really, it's still in the 20s and 30s in the morning. It's going to get up much higher this week. So you may be inclined to go out and do a lot of yard work. You might be inclined to go out and ride more miles or run more miles than you usually do, or just get outside and do more than you're used to. And it's not a good idea to do that because you'll hurt yourself. And so I know one of the things we think about in New England is making hay while the sun shines. That's an old saying. And, you know, you want to get out there and get stuff done while you have the good weather. And you want to take advantage of the good weather because we've been cooped up all winter. But the thing is, if you overdo it, you'll pull something and you'll be out of commission for a few days. So even though the weather's really nice, you still want to ease into it. Just because it's great weather doesn't mean you should go out and ride 50, unless you have the base for it, ride 50 miles or work in your yard for 8 hours or whatever your thing is. Go on a hike that's longer, like the last hike you went on was a mile and now you're going to go on a 5 mile hike. Not a good idea, because you'll pull something, right? So do it in smaller chunks. It's okay not to get everything done yesterday. It's only April. The weather's probably going to be a little capricious because that's what the spring does in New England. We're going to get this nice warm weather that leading through. We're going to have summer weather like Thursday and Friday. That's what it's looking like. But it's going to drop over the weekend. The weekend we're going to get back into the 70s, which is that sounds crazy. Back into the 70s. So do be careful. Go do smaller chunks. Take rests in between tasks. Don't feel like you have to get the whole yard done yesterday. Take breaks. Sit down. Have a glass of something cold to drink. Just sit in your yard and listen. And I can't say enough about using bird identifier apps. Sit in your yard and see who's out. We sat in the yard yesterday until it got a little too chilly to sit in the yard. And I pulled out my bird identifier app. And who was out? We heard the pine warbler. We heard a woodpecker pecking, and we didn't know if the app, because it's not technically a call, it's a peck. So we didn't know if the app would recognize the peck. And we were delighted when it did. And it said, this is a downy woodpecker. So it recognizes the peck probably by frequency. And it's both frequency of pecks and frequency high and low. Well, I guess that's not amplitude, but frequency of the number of pecks, as well as the pitch of the peck. So Peter Piper picked a pitch of pickled pepper. Anyway,
Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers.
He did that, but right. We had a downy woodpecker in our yard, and we had a pine warbler, and we had a tufted titmouse. And I think I saw a catbird sitting on one of the chairs out there this morning. That's the first sighting of a catbird I've seen this year. If that was indeed a catbird, I'll have to watch. And the catbirds are really funny because they meow. They go, meow. It's very delightful. And your app will recognize it and tell you that you have a catbird. We have gray catbirds that come around here, and they hang out for most of the summer, and then they go towards the end of the summer. It's very sad. But I'm delighted that we're in that time of year where the bird levels are going up. So do take time to sit and enjoy the birds, to just sit and relax. Don't feel like you have to go for 80-mile bike rides. You can go for a 13-mile or a 10-mile bike ride and come back and stretch afterwards. And if you want to be outside more, then you can do exercise in your yard. You can stretch in your yard. You can take a mat out and stretch in the sun. If it's warm enough this evening, I'll do yoga in the yard. And this is the time of year where we have to keep a little section of yard clipped close for me so I don't get ticks. Last year I was very fortunate because I didn't wind up getting any ticks from doing yoga in the yard. And I have to thank Ron for keeping my yoga patch very well trimmed. Plus some very lovely bug spray. I have a couple of lovely bug sprays that contain things in it like lemon eucalyptus, which helps to keep the mosquitoes away, and also rose geranium, which helps to keep the ticks away. I didn't use DEET. I think sometimes I might have used Bio-UD, which is the 2-undecanone. 2-undecanone is a tomato extract that prevents ticks. And speaking of which, I had a great suggestion from my colleague, Lauren Young, who is the CEO of Collaborative Natural Health Partners. I don't know if she remembers this. A couple years ago, we were at, I think, the CNPA conference. I am not sure if it was the CNPA conference or the New Hampshire conference. But we were at one of the conferences, and I saw her there. And she gave me this great tip, which was save your toilet paper rolls and then spray them with 2-undecanone and put them around the outskirts of your yard, especially in the yard where it changes from short cut to longer cut. And it'll help to repel ticks. So that's something we could do. Maybe we should start doing that. So saving our toilet paper rolls, and I'll spray them with Bio-UD and we'll put them around the yard. And it'll be a tick preventative.
Yeah, until it rains.
Well, maybe. All right, then
the rain will kind of wash it all away. That's the problem with all those repellents, is that once it rains, the rain washes down anything you put out.
Well, that's why
you got to keep putting it out.
Yeah, okay. So that's what you do. So if it rains, then you have to go get the one that was out there and retrieve it and put another one. So let's save our toilet paper rolls.
You should do that.
Okay. But I have to remind you to
leave that up to you. That's going to be your job.
Yeah, but you produce toilet paper rolls too, and paper towel rolls.
Not as many as you do.
You're right. Not as many toilet paper rolls. Paper towel rolls are your thing.
I produce them, but they're not in the volume.
They're few and far between. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm female. I have other parts to wipe. You made me say it.
I'm not going there.
It's the truth.
Okay. I'm not going there.
All right. Would you like
to
know?
It's a family show.
It is a family show. That's right. Anyone can listen to this show, and we want anyone to be able to listen. And
yeah,
do you think that young children don't do hygiene?
Mm-mm.
What's that on the floor?
What's
a ring of some kind?
It's a ring of some kind.
I don't know what that is.
It's a thing for your glasses to keep them from sliding.
Oh, all right. That's very nice. I thought you might want it. Okay.
No.
All right. So, would you like to know how statins work?
Oh, God. Yeah, sure. Why not? After all, I have been on them for almost 2 years.
Well, so this is our series on cardiovascular health. So we want to talk about statins today. Every so often we review cardiovascular health and what's going on with statins. So what are they? They treat high cholesterol. Do you know that the Weston Price Foundation says that? Now, I'm not saying I necessarily agree with this. I'm just putting it out there as information for you. But it's interesting to look at the Weston Price Foundation and see what their opinion is. They think, are you ready for this? They think that high cholesterol is a made-up illness. They think that the barrier for high cholesterol, the reference range for high cholesterol has gone down over the years, making it so that if the reference range gets lower and lower people have defined high cholesterol, which means that more people need to take statins. And how do statins make you feel?
Not good.
Right. Okay.
But so, I have a comment here, and it's just going to come straight from Harvard University here.
Right.
How do I stop my legs from hurting from statins? Because that's my complaint, is my legs hurt.
Yeah.
And it says exercise. That's when
that's
it
a
hurts.
Joke.
That's when it hurts.
So that's wrong. Do you
right.
agree that that is wrong?
Oh, I agree that that is wrong.
It's wrong.
Exercising regularly, taking statins are less likely to experience muscle pain and cramping. Untrue. Not
well,
true
well,
at all.
How do you know that that the people who don't exercise, their legs don't hurt way, way worse than yours?
I don't know. Mostly.
Yeah.
They mostly hurt.
Right. And like, but like
most of the
sometimes
time when I'm riding my bike, my legs hurt.
And you have that experience of your legs can't get warmed up.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's unfortunate.
It's definitely unfortunate.
So let's talk about a few things. So first of all, as I said, the Weston Price Foundation thinks that high cholesterol is a made up illness, and that there's not good proof that lowering cholesterol necessarily prevents a lot of heart attacks. Now, if you have high cholesterol, where my thoughts come in is I don't just test for cholesterol levels. I test for inflammatory markers as well. And if you're looking at, no matter what you do, your LDL, your low-density lipoprotein, tends to sit at 200 above. And I'm not talking about your total cholesterol. I'm talking about your low-density lipoprotein. It tends to sit at 200 or above. And your total cholesterol tends to sit at 300 or above. Then you probably have a gene for familial hypercholesterolemia. And you probably need to take some kind of cholesterol-lowering med or take more extreme measures to lower your cholesterol. I don't tend to recommend it for people who are below that benchmark, unless they have inflammatory markers or unless they've had a major cardiac event. And Ron didn't actually have a major cardiac event. All he had was, and he didn't even have angina. He had shortness of breath. And then he had cardiovascular exams and was found to have severely blocked coronary arteries. His cholesterol wasn't even through the roof. That's the interesting thing. So anyway, so the idea, so what statins are, people with high LDL cholesterol supposedly are at an increased risk of developing cardiovascular disease. And the idea is that cholesterol builds up in your arteries and can lead to angina, which is chest pain from reduction of oxygen to the heart muscle wall, heart attack, which is, and a heart attack specifically, heart attack is a, do you know, is not a, a medical term. Heart attack is a colloquial term for myocardial infarction. So myocardial means the muscle of the heart, and infarction means death to tissue because of reduced oxygen to that tissue. That's what a myocardial infarction is. So you have a part of your heart where the tissue has died. And when you have reduced oxygen to the heart, you have pain. That's what happens. And you get reduced oxygen to the heart because there's either a spasm or a blockage in one of the coronary arteries. The coronary arteries are the arteries that feed blood to the heart muscle wall. And you don't want them to get blocked because you need your heart. Your heart has to be pumping all the time, 24/7, 365, your entire life. And so it needs energy and it needs oxygen. And those arteries are very thin. It's amazing that they don't get blocked more than they do. But for a lot of people, they don't get blocked. And so they are as narrow as a piece of spaghetti. That's how narrow they are. Did you know that?
Yeah.
That's how thin they are. They're very, very thin. And so if you have trouble, if you really have demonstrated trouble with your coronary arteries getting blocked, it may be possible that statins will help to prevent them from getting blocked. So statins, now this source that I'm looking at says you should consider statins if your LDL is over 190 milligrams per deciliter. And if you look at the reference range from the major, from among the major labs, the reference range is 100. That if your LDL is over 100, I have patients freaking out, coming into my office saying, I have high cholesterol with an LDL of 117. And I'm looking at it going, well, hold on, hold the phone here. Let's calm down. And if you're very concerned about this, your doctor prescribing statins, and the doctor may be asking them to take statins, and the doctor may not be asking them to take statins. So the first thing I do is say, let's calm down for a second. Let's see what your HDL is. If the HDL is nice and high, it's in the 50s, 60s, or above, I'm like, you have a lot less to worry about right now. Is if your triglycerides, the form that fat takes in your blood to carry fats from one place to another, if your triglycerides are in the double digits, and especially if they're, you know, 70, 60, 50 or below, then you're at a lot less risk. And if you, and then I go and I measure inflammatory markers. And so we see about inflammatory markers. So there's a few things that I get into before I have my patients freak out. So this source is saying, this is the American Heart Association. And I'm like, this is a recent article too. It's saying that if you consider statins, if your LDL is over 190 milligrams per deciliter, if you're 40 to 75 years of age and you have diabetes, because diabetes, when you have diabetes, that elevated blood sugar causes oxidative damage to the inside of your arteries, and you're more likely to get atherosclerosis and damage to arteries everywhere. That diabetes, when that elevated blood sugar, and the elevated blood sugar also, you're more likely to have higher cholesterol and higher triglycerides. And the more cholesterol and triglycerides you have, there is an increased risk of oxidative damage to those fats. And when you have the increased risk of oxidative damage, that oxidation can damage the inside of those blood vessels. And then the blood vessels become damaged, and you will make more cholesterol to go try to repair that damage. Also, if you're between 40 to 75 years of age, you have an LDL between 70 and 189, which is a very large range, and you have an increased risk of cardiovascular disease in the next 10 years. So, and that's usually if you've already, you're going to have an increased risk if you've already had cardiovascular disease, if you have diabetes, if you already have angina, if you're sedentary, if you have familial hypercholesterol, if you have familial hypercholesterolemia, you're probably going to have an LDL that's pushing the 200 mark. So what do they do? So statins, But your body needs some cholesterol. It needs cholesterol. Cholesterol is an essential part of your body. It's not essential in the sense that a nutrient that is essential is something that you need to eat. And our bodies do manufacture cholesterol. So it's not technically an essential nutrient in that way, but it's essential in the colloquial sense, in the sense that you need cholesterol to function. And cholesterol is part of every cell membrane in your body. Guess what would happen if you had zero cholesterol in your body?
You'd disintegrate.
You'd die. Yeah, you can't have no cholesterol.
Right.
You must have some cholesterol. You can't not have cholesterol. So in order to have healthy functioning cell membranes, you need cholesterol to create those cell membranes. Guess what else you need cholesterol for?
Don't know.
It is a precursor to reproductive hormones.
Oh.
So say bye-bye to estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone.
I'm done with that.
So you... No, you're not...
Reproducing.
You're done with reproducing, but you're not done with having fun trying to reproduce.
Okay.
Right? So, do you have a sex drive?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, how is it that you have a sex drive? Because you have healthy functioning testosterone. You're making testosterone. Testosterone helps to give you a sex drive. And to some extent, DHEA gives you a sex drive. And hopefully, you're making some DHEA from your adrenals. Guess what you need to make DHEA and testosterone?
I'm going to guess it's cholesterol.
You got it, babe.
Yeah, there you go.
Guess what else you need to make cholesterol? You need to make from cholesterol?
Don't know.
Say the alphabet.
A, B, C, D.
Stop.
D.
You got it.
Vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Mm. So you need vitamin D. If you take a statin, you are going to lower your vitamin D level. All right?
Okay.
So you have to make sure, so if you're on a statin, please make sure that your doctor is regularly checking your vitamin D level, and you can take that vitamin D. So you need, if you're on a statin and you have to take the statin, and you know, your decision with your doc is that you're going to be taking a statin, please get your vitamin D level checked, and then take vitamin D so that your vitamin D level, your 25-hydroxy vitamin D level, sits somewhere above 55 nanograms per milliliter. I'm noticing that I'm on Facebook Live right now, and some of you may be listening to this after I've recorded it. I'm just noticing that nobody is listening to me on Facebook Live.
No.
Well, it's a nice, it could be it's because it's a nice day out, spring break, it's the day after Easter, you know,
yeah.
It's still Passover, I don't know. It could be a lot of things. But anyway, so I'm sure somebody will listen to this some other time, and you're probably listening to it on WHUS now, on Wednesday the 12th, and it's still Passover. Woohoo. And it'll be Passover until sundown on the 13th. You know what the 13th is?
Friday?
No, it's Thursday.
Okay.
It's the birthday of Chris DiPaolo.
Oh.
Yeah. May he rest in peace. So,
and what did he die from?
Oh, I don't know. I actually don't know.
It wasn't cardiovascular
disease? We think it was cardiovascular disease.
Right.
So
well,
rest in peace, Christopher.
That's why I was saying that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the number one cause of death in this country. You know, cardiovascular disease. It's much more common to get cardiovascular disease, much easier to get cardiovascular disease than it is even to get cancer, or even to die from COVID or an accident. When your cholesterol gets too high, the problem is if your cholesterol is oxidized, if it's small and dense, then it can block your arteries, and we'll talk more about that. But the job of statins is to decrease cholesterol levels in your body. They do it by blocking your body's production of an enzyme called HMG-CoA reductase. That enzyme resides in your liver. It's needed to make cholesterol. When you block the enzyme, your liver doesn't make as much cholesterol. So it makes it easier for your body to remove cholesterol that's already in your blood, and that totally lowers your cholesterol levels. And statins work. They really do. If you take a statin, your cholesterol will go down. It may be at the peril of some other conditions, but they work. They really do. If you want to get your cholesterol down, for whatever reason, if you take a statin, it'll work. People with the following conditions benefit the most from statins. People with a high risk of heart attack or stroke For example, if they have high blood pressure, if you have high blood pressure, you're more likely to get a heart attack or stroke. Why? Because when you have high blood pressure, I always use the analogy. We passed over Diana's pool when we were riding. Did we pass over Diana's pool this weekend? I think we did. Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we came home through Chaplin. So Diana's pool is gorgeous right now. I do recommend having a look at it. I do recommend having a look at any babbling brook, but Diana's pool is a favorite of kayakers because when it's really flowing, there's a lot of rapids. And it's beautiful right now. It's got a lot of rapids right now. So think about Diana's pool or your favorite your favorite brook that has a lot of rocks in it, right? So if you have rapidly flowing water, what happens? You get that beautiful white water, right? So you're having water that's bashing against all those rocks. What happens to the rocks when that water bashes over them?
They get smoothed
out. Yes, they do.
Yeah.
So how do you think that's happening?
It's erosion.
Yes.
It's the water pressure banging on the rocks and making sand.
And it's going to go through, and what it's going to do is when it's hitting those rocks, it's going to go after the low-hanging fruit, as it were. So by the low-hanging fruit, I mean anything that's sticking out, any rough surfaces, the easiest place to get to is where that water's going to go, which is why it smooths out the rock. So if there's a little jagged piece, if there's a little piece that's about to come off, it's going to hit that first. And so everything is going to get smoothed out. So when you have high blood pressure, think about the pressure that's going through. When there's a lot of water going through those white waters, that white water, the water is turbulent, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And thus are our arteries.
Right.
Right. So when you have turbulent blood flow going through your arteries, whether it's your coronary arteries or your cerebrovascular system, which are the arteries that lead to your brain, guess what do you think happens when you have turbulent blood flow through there? What did you say happens to the rocks?
Oh, you get sand.
Yeah, but what causes the sand? That other word you used.
It wears down.
Erosion.
Erosion.
Yes. Right. Guess what? You get erosion in your arteries and your body doesn't like erosion. When your body sees erosion, what do you think it does?
It reacts to it.
It tries to fix it.
Right.
Yes. And what does it fix it with? It fixes it with platelets, calcium, and
cholesterol.
You got it. All
Boom.
Right.
There we
so
go.
That's what plaques are made of.
Okay.
And so the thinking is that If you lower cholesterol, you're going to be less likely to make those atherosclerotic plaques. So what's a plaque? A plaque, as I said, it's a patch. It's like when you take your bicycle and you have a hole in your bicycle in your tube and you use a patch on it. All right. So so your body has a patch kit, and the patch kit has in it platelets, which are the they're the blood cells that stick together so that you can heal from cuts and things. Calcium, which is a hard substance that your body will use to smooth over things. Your body uses calcium for a lot of things, but one of the things it does is for repair. You'll have more calcifications when your body is trying to fix something. So if you get calcifications on a bone, it's because there's some damage to that bone and your body's trying to fix it. So if you get calcifications in your toes or in a joint, it's because there's something wrong with the joint. The joint is rubbing against something and it's your body's attempt to repair it. So your body does that with atherosclerotic plaques. And the plaques happen underneath the surface of the endothelium. The endothelium is the surface of your blood vessels, the surface of the inside of your blood vessels. And so this patching process does not actually happen on the surface of the endothelium. So again, so if you have a tube, the inside of the tube, the part that you can feel, think of that as the endothelium. Well, it's happening under the surface of that. If you have a breakage and that plaque breaks through that surface, that's when you have a really bad problem, because then it really does cause blocked blood flow, and pieces of it can break off and cause an embolism. And so it can block your breathing. It can block your heart function. That can give you an MI, a myocardial infarction. So Anyway, so when you take a statin, the idea is that you're going to lower the level of cholesterol so your body isn't as able to make those plaques. What I wonder is if your body thinks, okay, I have damage on the inside of my blood vessel, now I'm going to try to make an atherosclerotic plaque to patch it up, and it doesn't have the cholesterol to do it. What happens now that you can't patch it up? I'm wondering if you're more likely to get an aneurysm and the thing is more likely to break. Yeah. Because you're not, your body's not able to do its normal job of patching up the, you know, what happens if you have a tire and you're patching, you don't have one of the elements that you need to patch it. What's going to happen to that brake? Are you going to be, you can get aneurysms in tires and in, because we've seen aneurysms in tires. They make your tire go bump, 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 bump. And it could, the aneurysm could be in the tire and the aneurysm can be in the inner tube, right?
Yeah.
Using a lot of bicycle analogies for cardiovascular disease, which is appropriate in our house, I suppose. So LDL cholesterol gets lowered by statins. They definitely do. And they can lower LDL by as much as 60% depending on the med that you're taking and the dose that you're taking. Statins can help to lower triglycerides too, that form that fat takes when it runs around your blood vessels. And it can all, they can also raise your HDL. So that's not a bad thing when raising your HDL. So there are other benefits of statins, believe it or not. When you give statins to an organ transplant recipient, it reduces the risk of cardiovascular problems after the transplant. So it's still, you know, it's still in the realm of cardiovascular disease, but it's helping with that. And there's an idea that they can help to prevent organ rejection. I'm assuming that that's the case because when you have an organ transplant, you have to hook up arteries, you know, indwelling arteries to that new organ, and you want to keep those arteries clear. And so if you have a statin, I'm not sure how efficacious anti-rejection drugs are. So when you have a transplant, the DNA is not going to, even if it's a match for you, the DNA is still not you. It's not going to be 100% you. And people who take organs from other people, even if they're considered to be a genetic match, they still have to take anti-rejection drugs. And anti-rejection drugs are immunosuppressive. They generally have to take they take cyclosporine, which is an anti-rejection medicine. It's an immunosuppressant. And they often also have to take steroids. And so those are immunosuppressants that make it so that the body isn't as likely to use its immune system to go after that organ, seeing that organ as foreign. So the thing is, there's only so much it can do probably because you still have to do the anti-rejection drugs. So there may be some residual inflammatory stuff going on because the body is still recognizing this thing as foreign. So if there's increased inflammation, you're going to be more likely to have because you're using your own arteries to supply the organ. You might be a bit more likely because of the increased inflammation to have inflammation in the arteries leading to that organ, and more likely to have cardiovascular disease in those organs. So if you take a statin, again, you're less likely to make plaques, and you're going to be more likely to be able to have circulation supplying the organ, and of course the organ's going to survive better. So that's interesting. That it says here they're not sure how it works, but that would be my hypothesis. Statins also supposedly have anti-inflammatory properties. So it's not just that they lower cholesterol, they're supposedly directly anti-inflammatory. So if you have less inflammation overall, that lowers your risk of blood clots, heart attack, and stroke. But you don't have to take a statin to reduce your inflammation. I mean, ibuprofen lowers inflammation. People who take a lot of ibuprofen have a lower risk of cardiovascular disease and stroke, and people take aspirin. Those are not the first things I reach for when reducing inflammation in the body. We use our natural medicine anti-inflammatory. So you want to reduce inflammation and have an ongoing source of anti-inflammatory stuff. My favorites are curcumin and fish oil and SPMs, specialized specialized pro-resolving meat eaters, which are, they are an extract of fish oil that helps to reduce inflammation. I like resveratrol. Did I say resveratrol? All kinds of lovely anti-inflammatory things. And anything with anthocyanins in it, which are those beautiful red and purple colored compounds that are lovely anti-inflammatories that are in your blue and purple foods. There's also wonderful antioxidants that are not technically anthocyanins, like ellagic acid. Ellagic acid you can get in pomegranate and in raspberries. And then ellagic acid is that beautiful one. That's my favorite color. It's a beautiful magenta color. So it imparts that beautiful magenta color to pomegranates and also raspberries. And ellagic acid is helpful for helping your cholesterol. It's antioxidant. It's got a lot of great properties to it. And then there's betalins. You know, beets have that. Also have that beautiful sort of, you know, reddish, purplish, pinkish color. And they have betalins in them, which are similar to anthocyanins. They also have wonderful antioxidant properties. And they also are nitric oxide enhancers. And anything with a nitric oxide enhancer is going to calm your blood vessels down. When you have calmer blood vessels, you can have lower blood pressure. So if you have a calmer environment, a calmer, wider environment for the blood to go through, you're going to have less turbulent blood flow. You have less turbulent blood flow, you have less banging against the sides of those walls, and you have less damage and therefore less atherosclerosis. So those are the things we reach for that are anti-inflammatory. I wouldn't reach for a statin as my first anti-inflammatory because of all the side effects. So there are different types of statins, and the different statins are either water or fat soluble. So atorvastatin, and I actually, I don't have a list in front of me which is which, but I know that atorvastatin is fat soluble and rosuvastatin is water soluble. And then there's this list of the other ones, fluvastatin, lovastatin, pitavastatin, pravastatin, and simvastatin. And I'm not sure which is which. I don't have that in front of me. And if I find it out, you can also get combination drugs that have a couple of things in it. So there's atorvastatin combined with amlodipine. So that's atorvastatin, which is the brand, that's the generic name of Lipitor, combined with amlodipine, which is a blood pressure reducing med. And you can also get a drug that combines simvastatin with your favorite, ezetimibe. Yes, so that's a statin plus ezetimibe in one pill. Supposedly, if you take a statin, you should avoid grapefruit. Okay, so let's talk about avoiding grapefruit. Are you on a med and your doctor said don't eat grapefruit? Did your doctor say don't eat grapefruit?
No.
Yeah, interesting. So the thing is, you don't have to avoid grapefruit. If you're like, if you rarely eat grapefruit and then you go to the Italian ice stand and they have grapefruit flavor and it's a hot sunny day and you're like, I love grapefruit. I'm going to have grapefruit Italian ices. See, that sounds really good to me because I love grapefruit. I love grapefruit juice and grapefruit flavored things, grapefruit flavored candy, and just eating a grapefruit. They're delicious, especially if you're in Florida and you just picked it off the tree, then they're awesome. And grapefruits are interesting because they're not quite as sweet as oranges and they have some bitter notes. And I love things that are bittersweet. So bittersweet chocolate, bittersweet grapefruit, bittersweet coffee, you know, those are good. You like that too, because you like chocolate
except
and coffee.
Except the bittersweet that grows outside, which is an invasive vine.
No, and well, that's another.
That's another.
Don't make me go on another tangent, because okay. There's a couple of plants that are known as bittersweet.
Yes.
Because there's the dulcamara bittersweet, and the one you're talking about, I think, is not dulcamara. Dulcamara bittersweet. That's the one that grows, and it has like spear shaped leaves, and it has beautiful little purple flowers with a yellow dot inside them, and the flowers are the same shape as tomatoes. Why? Because dulcamara bittersweet is a nightshade. And in fact, that bittersweet is deadly nightshade. The one you're talking about, I think, is a different species, but it's still known as bittersweet. Anyway, getting back to grapefruit and statins. So the deal is, grapefruit has a constituent in it called naringin. Naringin. It's a flavonoid, and it slows down the functioning of your phase one liver detox. So if you're on a statin and you don't eat grapefruit every day and you don't drink grapefruit juice every day, and someone says, here, have some grapefruit juice, my opinion is you can go ahead and drink it. If you have a little bit once in a while, it's fine. If you have a grapefruit, if you buy a grapefruit at the grocery store and you only buy one, and that week you have a half a grapefruit on two different days, and then you don't have it the rest of the week, I think you're fine. What you want to stay away from is having grapefruit juice every single day and having grapefruit every day. Because there could be enough naringin. What will happen is it'll slow down the functioning of your phase one liver detox, and you'll effectively raise the dose of your drug. And if that drug is giving you side effects anyway, you're going to get more. So that would be why not to have statins. And it's worse with lovastatin and simvastatin. It is rare that I see a patient come in on prescribed lovastatin and simvastatin. Now, speaking of lovastatin, monocolins are the constituent that is in red yeast rice. So if you're thinking, oh, I'm not going to take a statin, I'm just going to take red yeast rice. The way red yeast rice works, if it has proper amounts of monocolins in it, is it has statins in it. It's got lovastatin in it. So that's the other place you're going to see lovastatin. It's a statin. And I've had people take red yeast rice and get the same side effects that they get when they take prescribed statins, because that's how it works. It says here, most people, define most, can take statins without too many side effects. I have to ask you, Ron, now I don't have a statin stat on this statin thing, but when you talk to your friends that also take statins, how many of your friends that are taking statins, have you ever had a friend say to you, wow, I don't have any problems with my statins?
Ever? I don't think I ever have.
Right. So every person you've talked to who's on a statin is like, oh, my legs. Oh, my back. Oh, my whatever.
Or something. Yeah.
Oh, my belly.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Oh, my liver enzymes went up. So yeah. So when you talk to your friends about statins, everybody has a problem that you know.
It seems.
So that's not a stat, by the way. This is anecdotal. But in our experience, I'm seeing people in my practice all the time coming in. Again, I don't have stats on it. This is saying most, and there's no backup with a stat there.
Right, because it's probably produced by the pharmaceutical companies that are selling the statins.
Perhaps.
They don't want you to think there's a problem with them. They don't want you to think there's a problem with anything until they get sued, and then they say death may be one of the side effects.
So it does say side effects can occur, and it's hard to say if one type of statin will give you more side effects than another, and if you have lasting effects, your doctor can adjust your dosage or recommend a different statin. So you've already been on two different statins, and they both give you problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the ezetimibe also gave, so we'll talk about ezetimibe in a little bit. So the side effects, so tell me how many of these you've had. Muscle pain, constipation, diarrhea, nausea, and headache. We know muscle pain.
Pain.
Yep. Not constipation.
Not constipation.
What about diarrhea?
Not really there either, but I am having some belly issues right now.
And we don't know if that's because of the statins.
But we don't know if it's the statins or not. I mean, I've been on them for almost 2 years now. So.
I haven't heard you complain about nausea.
No.
And you get headaches anyway.
Well, I get them from sinuses, yeah.
Right. And are the headaches still typical of the headaches you got before you ever took statins?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So other side effects that people who take statins can include fatigue, dizziness, weakness, stomach pain, and gas.
I sleep a lot more now than I used to. I take more naps, but
right.
Then again, I'm also old.
Well, that's what everybody thinks. They think they're
old. I don't
know
if that's the side effect of being old or if that's the side effect of the statin.
And you also are hypothyroid, and your thyroid.
And it was a little off last time.
That's right. So
apparently there's a connection there. I was just reading this thing
statins
from Harvard,
and
there was a piece here about
statins and thyroid, that
yeah.
Statins mess up your thyroid medication, or the statins
yeah,
mess up your thyroid?
Have a thyroid blood test. If you have low thyroid hormone level, taking replacement thyroid hormone pills may alleviate the muscle pain, can also improve your lipid profile.
And, well, if you're hypothyroid, hypothyroidism increases your risk of having high cholesterol because of how it manages your metabolism.
Mm.
So when you're hypothyroid, you can have high cholesterol, but you're taking a statin and you're, you know, I think you're well controlled and you're still having tweakiness in your thyroid. And I think the reason you have tweakiness in your thyroid level is because it's hard to dial in when you're an athlete. And that my opinion about thyroid is that thyroid is something like my thyroid, you know, I have a normally functioning thyroid, right? So if I'm running around crazy, if I'm going on that nice bike ride we went on the weekend, my thyroid's going to kick out more thyroid hormone because I need to metabolize more. If I'm lying there doing yin yoga, I'm going to kick out a lot less thyroid. And if I'm asleep, I'm going to kick out less thyroid hormone because I'm lying there sleeping. Although when you're sleeping, you have a different kind of metabolism. You're in your restorative, reparative zone. But anyway, thyroid is an on-demand hormone. And my thyroid, which functions normally, kicks out thyroid hormone as I need it. Your thyroid is sluggish, so it doesn't kick out as much as you need. And you're getting replacement, and you take a certain dose at a certain time of day, which is not how the body functions. That's why some clever doctors who can prescribe will give sustained release T3, which is a very interesting thing. And you have to get a really sympathetic doctor who's holistically oriented, who has a relationship with a compounding pharmacy, and they give you sustained release T3. And sustained release means that it's gently released throughout the course of the day instead of giving you, when you take a single dose of something, it's called a bolus dose. And that's what you take when you get up in the middle of the night and pop your thyroid hormone. So anyway, so statins can cause, wait, are you ready for this? Statins can cause muscle pains, especially in high doses, and they can even cause your muscle cells to break down, and you can get something called rhabdomyolysis, and it can cause serious damage to your kidney. So what rhabdomyolysis is that muscle breakdown. Your muscle cells open up, and they have a substance in them called myoglobin. So hemoglobin is the red pigment in all of your red blood cells, and hemoglobin's job is to run around your body picking up and dropping off oxygen. It has iron at the center of it. Hemoglobin has iron at the center of the molecule. And iron, as you know, rusts easily, right? So iron oxide, if you stick your iron-based frying pan outside, what's going to happen to it? It's going to rust. Mm-hmm. What's rust? Iron oxide. Okay. So iron easily, it has an interesting relationship with oxygen. It picks up and drops off oxygen rather easily. So it makes it a great molecule to have in your red blood cells. Well, you have similar molecules in your muscles called myoglobin that also pick up and drop off oxygen. Myoglobin is a decent sized molecule. And when you have that muscle breakdown, you can dump a bunch of myoglobin into your blood vessel into your blood vessels. And if you have too much myoglobin going through, it gets to your kidneys for processing and release, and you have tiny little capillaries in your kidneys, lots and lots of them. And your kidneys can get blocked up with all this myoglobin that can't get through, and you can get kidney failure. So kidney failure is a risk of taking statins. Yippee. It's also a risk of doing too much, too soon, high intensity exercise. People get rhabdomyolysis who do high intensity interval training. Not all the time, but that's why you have to ease into it so your muscles are more accustomed to it. But you can get rhabdomyolysis from doing very high intensity interval training, especially if you do too much too soon, if you do way more than you're used to. So rhabdomyolysis is greater if you take other medications. And you're not on any of these other medications. So remember when we talked about how statins can help to protect you if you have an organ transplant? That if you have an organ transplant, that statins can protect you, can give you a longer lasting life for your organ. So cyclosporine is an anti-rejection drug, and frequently people who have organ transplants are on cyclosporine. Cyclosporine can increase your risk of rhabdomyolysis. So if you take a statin and you have an organ transplant and you're taking cyclosporine, you have an increased risk of rhabdomyolysis. So that's kind of scary. And there are a couple of antifungals, itraconazole and ketoconazole. and protease inhibitors that are used to treat HIV. So if you're on an anti-HIV drug, chances are it's a protease inhibitor, and if you take a statin too, it can increase your risk of rhabdomyolysis. Erythromycin is an antibiotic. And so you just try, and if you're on a statin, there's so many antibiotics. If you have to take an antibiotic, there's so many that you can take. I would also suggest that it's a good idea, if you're going to take, not going to take erythromycin, it's a good idea not to take a fluoroquinolone. Fluoroquinolone is any of the antibiotics that end in floxacin, ciprofloxacin, moxifloxacin. So cipro and levaquin, which is levofloxacin. Anything that ends in floxacin, probably not a good idea while you're on a statin, because you have a risk of tendon rupture just from those drugs. You have a risk of muscle breakdown when you take a statin, so probably not a good idea to do floxacins either. Then there's fibrate drugs, which I don't see people coming in on those. Gemfibrozil, for example. If you take gemfibrozil, you're more likely to get muscle breakdown and rhabdomyolysis. There's two blood pressure meds, and people are often on blood pressure meds as well as statins, like verapamil and diltiazem. Those are two drugs that it increases your risk. Amiodarone, which is something I don't see people on very frequently. I don't know. It's a very old drug. It's an iodine-bearing drug. And it's an antiarrhythmic. It helps you to maintain a healthy heart rhythm. And if you take that with a statin, you're more likely to get rhabdomyolysis. But I don't see people on it a lot. Then there's colchicine. And I do see people on colchicine and also allopurinol. It doesn't mention allopurinol, but it does say colchicine. Usually people will use colchicine if they're having a gout flare. They don't use colchicine daily. People do tend to take allopurinol daily to keep their uric acid levels low. But if you have gout and you get put on a statin and you have colchicine as a rescue, be careful with that. Then there's neflazodone, which is cirzone, which I rarely see people on. And then niacin. If you take niacin along with your statin, you can be more likely to get muscle damage. Did not realize that. And I do have some people on niacin, but people, I would generally, if you're on a statin already, I don't know why you would be on niacin. So if you're on a statin already, it's probably a good idea not to take, and that's high dose niacin. So when I'm giving people niacin to help with their cholesterol or their lipoprotein little A, I'm giving them 500 milligrams a couple of times a day, 1 to 2 times a day. And that's a huge dose of niacin. You know, when you're taking it in your B complex, you might be getting 20, 50 milligrams or 100 milligrams, and that's not going to have as much of an issue. Liver damage, surprise, surprise. Now, fortunately, Ron, every time Ron gets his blood work done, he hands me his labs, and I've never seen him with elevated liver enzymes, thank God. So if you have yellowing of the skin and the whites of your eyes, or yellowing of the skin in general. If you have very dark urine or pain in your upper right abdomen, that's where your liver is, you could have liver damage. And your doctor will check your liver function test, your AST and your ALT, or depending on the lab, SGPT and SGOT. They're just different names for the same compounds. When your liver is damaged, there's inflammation and irritation to the liver, they will spill those contents into your blood, and you will be able to see those levels rise in your liver. When you take statins, you have an increased risk of diabetes. It changes how the body processes blood glucose, and there's a small risk of developing type 2 diabetes. So, it doesn't give you a mechanism for that. I think
right.
The reason
blood
is...
blood sugar's good, though, right?
Yeah, your blood sugar's always been good. Well, I mean, you're very fortunate because you have very high metabolism. So why might that be? I think because, again, you're lowering cholesterol. When you lower cholesterol, you have a couple things happening. You could be lowering your anabolic hormones. So there's some help in regulating blood sugar when you have a balance of estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. The other thing that's going on is, as I said, cholesterol is part of all of the cell membranes in your body. And if you are not as able to make healthy cell membranes, you're going to have more of an issue getting glucose into your cells. So your blood sugar can rise. It's just that it's all about the health of those cell membranes. You want to have excellent cell membrane fluidity. Excellent cell membrane fluidity is very, very important. Very important. And one of the ways you get better cell membrane fluidity is to take fish oil and eat essential fatty acids. You get very nice cell membrane fluidity there. The other thing you can get is confusion or memory problems. And I think they can also make you cranky, because that's what I have observed. I just got a Bronx cheer. And I'm not even from the Bronx. I'm from Queens. Is there a Queens cheer?
Oh, I'm sure there is a Queen's chair.
The other thing that that thing is called is a raspberry, and I love raspberries, so thank you.
Very nice, dear.
Raspberries have ellagic acid. Ellagic acid's very good for you.
Of course you would go there.
Yeah. Well, sure. You were just reminding me to remind everybody about ellagic acid again.
There it is.
Yes.
That must be it.
So why would it cause confusion or memory problems? Well, it could have to do with the blood sugar. If you have high blood sugar, you're going to have more damage to nerves and cells in your body that are involved in cognitive function. That's one reason. One mechanism of action. The other mechanism of action would be that, again, it's all about the cell membranes. Where else do you have cell membranes? On your nerves, in your brain. So if your cell, if your nerves can't regenerate the way that they're supposed to, you're going to have cognitive issues. And you have cognitive issues to start with, you poor thing, because you have ADHD. So that's no good. So these statins could be worsening your ADHD, which is unfortunate. So, when you're hypothyroid, you have a higher risk of getting side effects from statins. Also, when you have high levels of CPK, creatine phosphokinase, which is a muscle, I mean, you don't have that, which is an enzyme that supports muscle function, you're more likely to have statins side effects if you're over 80. Also, if you're East Asian, which you're not, if you're assigned female at birth, which you were not, if you have small body size, which you do.
Yeah.
Which means that they may need to continue to adjust your doses of the statin, because if you have small body size, you don't need to take as much. That you can get away with taking less stuff. And also conditions that affect your liver and kidneys. Because most of the research on statins involve middle-aged white people, there's less information about people of color and other adult groups. And that people of East Asian descent may be more likely to have the side effects. But people of East Asian and Black people and Hispanic people also get the same cholesterol lowering effects. If you're over 75, some research suggests that you might be at higher risk of muscle problems related to statins. And supposedly, the thought is that the benefits outweigh the risks. So you want to discuss the side effects with your doc. So that's all about statins. That was good. We took up a lot of time talking about the statins. So this is a very rich topic. I have lots more to talk about in this cardiovascular series, so that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about more of it next week. And next week will be my last show before I go to the Connecticut Naturopathic Physicians Association conference, and at some point I will give a redux on that conference. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.